O King, the water from Lord Brahma's Kamandala washed the lotus feet of Lord Vamanadeva, who is known as Arukrama, the wonderful actor. Thus, that water became so pure that it was transformed into the water of the Ganges, which went flowing down from the sky, purifying the three worlds, like the pure fame of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please repeat. O King, the water from Lord Brahma's Kamandalu washed the lotus feet of Lord Vamanadeva, who is known as Arukrama, the wonderful actor. Thus that water became so pure that it was transformed into the water of the Ganges, which went flowing down from the sky, purifying the three worlds, like the pure fame of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Here we understand that the Ganges began when water from Lord Brahma's Kamandalu washed the lotus feet of Lord Vamanadeva. But in the fifth canto, it is stated that the Ganges began when Lord Vamanadeva's left foot pierced the covering of the universe so that the transcendental waters of the causal ocean leaked through. And elsewhere, it is also stated that Lord Narayan appeared as the water of the Ganges. The water of the Ganges, therefore, is a combination of the three transcendental waters, and thus the Ganges is able to purify the three worlds. This is the description given by Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. Om Agyana Chinirandasya Agyanandana Sarakaya Chakshurun Militam Gena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. O King, the water from Lord Brahma's Kamandalu washed the lotus feet of Lord Vamanadeva, who is known as Arukrama, the wonderful actor. Thus that water became so pure that it was transformed into the water of the Ganges, which went flowing down from the sky, purifying the three worlds, like the pure fame of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is taking place after Lord, or during Lord Vamana's second step, his lotus foot extended to the upper regions of the universe, to the abode of Lord Brahma, and, as we read, pierced the universe. So it's described when Lord Brahma and the sages on Brahmaloka saw the effulgence of Lord Vamanadeva's foot, somehow or another they washed that foot with Lord Brahma's Kamandalu. This Kamandalu also is filled with particular potency. As I was contemplating and studying this topic, we remember that Bali Maharaj's great-grandfather was also bathed with this Kamandalu. Bali Maharaj's father is Virochana, Virochana's father is Prahlad, and Prahlad's father is Hiranyakasipu. And you may remember that he was a Brahma Bhakta, and he was doing great austerities and penances, trying to become immortal. And was living in the bones of his body. He was doing such intense tapasya. And I think smoke began to come from his body, and it created a disturbance, and Lord Brahma finally became pleased. And if you remember, he flew on his swan carrier to the place where Hiranyakasipu was performing his tapasya and poured some water from his Kamandalu onto the anthill, the place where Hiranyakasipu was performing that tapasya. And immediately, Hiranyakasipu was benedicted by that water, with a youthful, powerful, young body that was practically indestructible. So this is not an ordinary event. It's not ordinary water. There's a story from the Brahma Purana which describes about Lord Brahma's Kamandalu and how he got it. It's a little lengthy, but it's a nice story. It's from from the Brahma Purana. Lord Brahma explains to Narada Muni how he received his Kamandalu from Lord Shiva. 10,000 years before Ganges appeared in Satyayuga, the demigods were harassed by a great demon, Taraka, who usurped the Devas' glorious position and wealth. Thereafter, all the Devas, headed by Indra, sought shelter of Lord Vishnu. They prayed, "O Lord Hari, we have no other refuge. Our positions have been taken away, our women have been disgraced, and we have been rendered homeless. O Lord, please protect us." Lord Vishnu then asked them what danger had overwhelmed them, and they replied, "The Asura demon named Taraka causes our hair to stand on end, for we are incapable of killing him in battle. He will meet death only from a 10-day-old child." He must have been benedicted somehow. "Therefore, O Lord, please take action with this child in mind." Lord Vishnu replied, "O Devas, I am not powerful. I am not very powerful. He cannot be killed by me, nor by my child, nor by any of you. Taraka, the scorcher of the worlds, will meet his death from an extremely powerful child born from Lord Shiva. Hence, let us all await the marriage of Shiva with Parvati, the daughter of Himavan." Thereafter, all the Devas went to the Lord of the Himalayas, Himavan, and his consort, Mena. They explained their plan, and both of them became extremely enthusiastic to help execute the secret plot. As time passed, the beloved Gauri Parvati was born in the abode of Himavan. For the pleasure of Lord Shiva, she engaged herself in great austerities and meditation, performing penances on the ridge of the Himalayan mountains, as instructed by the demigods. The Devas discussed with one another on how to arouse Lord Shiva's interest in marriage. On the advice of the intelligent Brihaspati Muni, they arranged to have Kamadev, Cupid, and his consort Rati, and Vasant, Spring, enter into Lord Shiva's ashram. Then demigods thought, "Since the arrows of the victorious Cupid have never been ineffective, Lord Shiva will certainly desire to marry." As Cupid stood in front of Lord Shiva, however, holding his bow and arrows, he became doubtful and began to think to himself, "Will Lord Shiva, who is the preceptor of the entire worlds, be pierced by my arrows?" Just at that moment, Cupid was reduced to ashes by Lord Shiva's third eye. The demigods approached Lord Shiva with folded hands, saying, "The great fear of Taraka has overwhelmed us. Please, make the daughter of Himavan your wife." With these words entered Lord Shiva's mind, he acted in accordance with the demigods' plea. The wedding took place in the Himalayan mountains, which are beautifully bedecked with different kinds of jewels, various trees, creepers, birds, rivers, lakes, and wells. These mountains are frequently visited by the demigods, celestial singers and dancers, yogis, great rishis, and learned sages. They are surrounded by mountains like Meru, Mandara, Kailas, and the golden Mainaka. Several sages, such as Vashishta, Agastya, Pulastya, and Lomasa, attended the celestial festivities. Viswakarma and his son Twaster constructed the wedding altar, which was studded with jewels, bedecked with gold, and lined with columns of diamonds, rubies, and sapphires. Prajapati Daksha's daughters, Jai, Lakshmi, Kshanti, Kirti, and Pushti attended, along with the beautiful divine cows such as Sarabi, Nandini, Nanda, and Sunanda, who fulfill every desire. Even the oceans, rivers, serpents, and mothers of the world performed various services for the marriage ceremony, and the earth, herbs, Varuna, Kuvera, and Agni supplied whatever was needed. Lord Vishnu, as the honored guest, presided over the marriage, while Lord Brahma performed the sacrifice. After the holy fire was set ablaze, the divine couple, Gauri and Shankar, circumambulated the altar. At that time, Lord Vishnu encouraged Lord Shiva to touch the toe of the right foot of the beautiful goddess with his hand. While performing his duties, Lord Brahma saw that foot of Gauri and with an agitated mind committed a great offense that produced the Vaikas, 60,000 pygmy sages who reside in the solar region. Brahma was overwhelmed with shame and began to leave the ceremony, but Lord Shiva called Brahma to return in order to free him from his offense. Lord Shiva then extracted the sacred essence of the earth and the waters, and after creating a kamandalu from the earth, he poured the waters into this kamandalu while consecrating them with sacred mantras and hymns. He then gave Brahma this water pot, which was the combination of the earth and waters that were the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction. Lord Shiva then glorified Lord Brahma's kamandalu by saying, "In this kamandalu, the dharma, religious morality, is established. It is here that eternal sacrifice remains. It is here that enjoyment and salvation are established. By remembering this kamandalu, mental sins perish. By bathing, drinking, and performing offerings with this sacred water, physical sins perish. This alone is nectar. There is nothing more sacred than this. O Brahma, take this kamandalu that has been consecrated by me with special mantras. Of all five elements, water is the greatest. This sacred water is the best of all waters. By touching, remembering, and seeing this water, which is very splendid and pure, one is liberated from all sins." So this water, after bathing Lord Vamanadeva's feet, came down and goes throughout the entire three worlds. We know that the lotus flower sprouting from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu's navel rises up to the lotus abode of Lord Brahma. So apparently this water is like trickling down the lotus stem, inundating all the different planets in the three worlds. And on this planet, of course, in India, it first manifests in Gomukh, in the northern regions of the Himalayas, runs down in several different streams, comes through Deoprayag, Rishikesh, Hardwar, comes down, goes to Triveni, where it meets with the Jamuna, and then ultimately empties into the ocean at Ganga Sagara, just south west of Calcutta. So the question may be raised, how do we know that this water is really purifying? And you can practically prove it. Because if you look at a topographical map of India, that means one of those ones that shows the mountains and the highs and the lows, you see that there, it's called the subcontinent. The whole continent includes all up there, Russia, China, Tibet, then there's the Himalayas. South of the Himalayas, there's Tibet and Nepal, but then there's all of India. And from Uttar Pradesh, Jammu and Kashmir, over down Punjab, through Uttar Pradesh, Madhya Pradesh, Bihar, and Bengal is where the Ganges flows. And for about 200 or 300 miles on both sides of that river, during that entire stretch, what's the unique feature of the culture of those people? They're Krishna Bhaktis. The entire way. So how is it that out of this whole planet, all the different things and all the different cultures and all the different places and all the different people and food they eat and languages they speak and clothing they wear, somehow or another, by Krishna, by the purification of this water? Because what happens is that as that water flows, it not only flows within it, within its banks, but naturally water flows in the land. And all those people are very agriculturally oriented. There's a lot of basmati rice and different wheats and vegetables, so many different things. I'm sure most of us have been to Vrindavan, perhaps in the summertime, when the banks of the Jamuna become so low that the farmers go out and cultivate watermelons, loki, different kinds of squashes. So what's happening is the Jamuna, or the Ganges, depending on where you're located, comes up through the earth and produces these things. All the people on the banks of those of the Ganges along that area always bathe in those sacred waters. And in this way, it's gradually purifying. This is the internal potency of the Lord. We know that there are basically three different energies: the Antaranga Shakti, or the internal spiritual potencies of the Lord. The Lord himself, his abode, which includes the elements which make up the abode: the earth, the water. So this water is transcendental. Then there's the external energy: Bhumira Pola Nilo Vayu Kamano Buddha Vacha. So there's a reflection of that transcendental water in the water of this world. Then there's the marginal energy. So purifying means that substances coming, or that we come in contact with from the spiritual world, enthuse us, nurture us, ignite our spiritual sentiments, our spiritual interests. If a living entity, marginal potency, doesn't come in contact with spiritual energy, then it becomes covered by material energy. That's what tiny marginal means, that it can go either way. Just like Srila Prabhupada gave the example of electricity. It can be made cold in refrigeration, or it can be made hot through a heater. The same energy. So Krishna has made wonderful arrangements for us in so many ways, hundreds of ways, where we can come in contact with spiritual energy. And an intelligent person will try to take advantage, to immerse themselves, just like when one bathes in the Ganges. One time I took a drive with Banu. At that time, Banu, now Banu Maharaj. And we went all the way from, we started in Vrindavan. We were in a van, a Mahendra van, and we drove all the way south to Bangalore, then all the way west to Madras, at the time, now Chennai, all the way up to Mayapur, and all the way back to Vrindavan. And in India, plus we went on Padyatra for a year, so many different things, Indian people, the culture, live very much differently than we do. We would drive, and towards the end of the day, after driving long, hot, stinky drives, and like this, you come to a place where the sun is starting to set, and practically wherever you go, there's some sort of river or kund where everybody takes advantage of it. The sun's setting, you get out, you bathe. It's so refreshing and cooling and purifying of the mind. That one is able to come back into the mode of goodness and again function on a spiritual level. And this constant endeavor, constant coming in contact with this pure waters of the Ganges purifies one. Both, Srila Prabhupada says, both materially and spiritually. So, one time, when Krishna was a young boy, young boy, living in Gokul. The boys were out playing, and as you know, the Yamuna goes near that area. Pramandagat, if any of you have ever been there, this is where Krishna ate dirt. So it wasn't far away from the house, but a little bit away, and all the boys were out playing. And Mother Yasoda started, it was time for lunch, so Mother Yasoda started calling, "Krishna, Balaram, Sridham, Sudham, come back, lunchtime." But the boys were so immersed in playing. And no, they didn't even listen. They were just playing. So Mother Yasoda told Rohini, "You please go get the boys. It's time to eat." So Rohini came out and gathered all the, tried to gather them, tried to stop them, but they wouldn't listen to her. So she got a little frustrated and went back and said, "Yasoda, I can't. But they're playing. They're so absorbed in playing. So Mother Yasoda became angry. She came out with her stick. And she said, boys, what are you nonsense doing? I tell you to come home, you come home. So Krishna and Balaram started to come home, and all the boys were saying, ah, just see, these guys are like such wimps. They listen to their mother all the time. Next time Krishna is playing, we won't allow him to play because his mother's going to come and take him away, so this isn't a good idea. So Krishna and Balaram turned around and started to go and again play. And then Mother Yasoda said, oh, boys, come on now. Nanda Maharaj is waiting for you. So then they heard that Nanda couldn't take his lunch without their presence. So they agreed, okay, Mother will come back. So everybody was sitting at the dinner table, and Nanda Maharaj's older brother, Upananda, was mentioning there are so many disturbances here in Gokul, Putana, Trinavarta, that I've been doing some research, and I found a very nice place that we should go. Of course, he was talking about Nandagraha and Vrindavan. So everybody agreed that they would transfer from Gokul to Vrindavan. And as we know, they packed everything up. They got it all in their carts. They put everything up and they started to go. And they came to Chatikar, which now is just at the end of Bhaktivedanta Swami Marg, Delhi, Vrindavan Road, that intersection, that little town there. It's called Chatikar. And they set up their everything there, all their carts, and stayed there for some time while the residences in Nandagram were being produced and constructed. And at this time, Krishna went from, what are the names of his different ages? Bal to Pagunda? Is that the next one up? So when he was going from that very young age to the next stage up, that's when the boys were given charge of the calves. Not yet cows, but calves, so that they would watch the calves. So in this way, Krishna and Balaram started to go out and maintain the calves close to the cowherd men who were out with the cows. And one day when they were playing, Krishna noticed that one of the calves was a demon, Vatsasura. So he went up with Balaram behind him and whirled him around and threw him up in a tree. And then that thing fell down and revealed that he was a demon. Everybody was congratulating him and everything, but they said, but Krishna, you killed a demon. Now you have to go bathe in the Ganges to become purified from this sin. So Krishna's a young boy. What's he going to do? How's he going to go all the way to the Ganges? He said, no, I don't want to leave Braj and go to Ganges. So by his meditation, I was out near Govardhan Hill, he meditated, and from his mind, the Ganges manifested as a lake in Govardhan Hill, Manasi Ganga. So Krishna bathed in that water and became freed from the sin of killing the calf. Sometime later, on another occasion, Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yasoda, and the residents of Brajadham were told a story about the glories of the river Ganges. They heard that Garuda, the giant bird carrier of Lord Vishnu, had been searching for food when he came across a large snake. He immediately picked it up and flew away. When they passed over the Ganges, the tail of that snake happened to touch the sacred waters. And due to its touch, the snake immediately attained a four-armed form identical with the residents of Vaikuntha Loka. When Garuda saw this, he placed that glorious personality on his back and personally carried him to Vaikuntha. When Nanda Maharaj and the residents of Brajdham heard of this event, they all desired to take a dip in the sacred waters of the Ganges. Therefore, they all prepared to leave immediately. When Krishna saw all of the preparations going on, he inquired from his mother and father as to where they were planning to go. They informed him that they were going on pilgrimage to the river Ganges. Thereupon, Krishna declared to them that there was no need to go out of Braj Mandala to visit any other holy place, as all the tirthas throughout the entire three worlds were present in Vrajadham itself. The residents of Vrindavan thought Krishna was just a small child and didn't fully really understand these matters. But Krishna insisted again and again that there was no necessity for them to go and visit any other place. When he saw that they were not convinced, he led them to the shores of Manasi Ganga, in the center of Govardhan Hill. There, in front of them all, Ganga Devi immediately appeared in her personified form and offered prayers to the Lord. When the residents of Vrindavan saw Ganga Devi, they offered their respectful obeisances to her. They all took their baths in the sacred waters and offered her ghee lamps. This pastime took place on the dark moon night in the month of Kartik. Up to the present time, that day is celebrated throughout India as Diwali, Deepavali, when people in every home light lamps with which they will decorate their rooftops. Also to this day, thousands of people gather at Manasi Ganga with small lamps in clay cups and float them on the sacred waters, thus lighting up the whole lake. Have anybody here been to Radhakund during the Bahulastami, the appearance of Radhakund? Radhakund also, we know that when Lord Chaitanya was traveling, Lord Chaitanya didn't personally excavate holy places, write books, establish scriptural documentation of the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. So whatever he did, like Shikshastika, is extremely foundational and dear to the devotees. So on another occasion, we all know the story of Aristasura, there's a nice element of that part of Govardhan. When Krishna and Balaram were a little older and were taking care of the cows, the area to that end, Govardhan's like a long peacock, and that area of Govardhan is pretty far away from everything. So in Krishna's leelas with different gopis, that part is geographically a quiet place, a place where the cowherd boys and the cowherd men won't go. So that's why the more intimate pastimes take place there. And Radha and Krishna and all the gopis, they were enjoying, and Aristasura came and terrorized everyone, and Krishna killed him. And as we know, everybody said that he had to become purified because of killing the bull. So he pushed his lotus foot into the ground and called all the sacred water in the entire universe, just as Lord Shiva did with Lord Brahma's Kamandalu, and all the different waters of the entire universe are present in that kund. So I wanted to end by reading the last three verses of Upadeshamrita by Srila Rupa Goswami, in hopes that we become enthused to take advantage, whenever we go to these places, of the different spiritual tools or, what would you call them? Things that are available to us. Utensils. The holy place known as Mathura is spiritually superior to Vaikuntha, the transcendental world, because the Lord appeared there. Superior to Mathura Puri is the transcendental forest of Vrindavan, because of Krishna's Rasalila pastimes. And superior to the forest of Vrindavan is Govardhan Hill, for it was raised by the divine hand of Sri Krishna and was the site of his various loving pastimes. And above all, the super excellent Sri Radha Kund stands supreme, for it is overflooded with the ambrosial nectarine prema of the Lord of Gokula, Sri Krishna. Where, then, is that intelligent person who is unwilling to serve this divine Radha Kund, which is situated at the foot of Govardhan Hill? In the Shastra, it is said that of all types of fruitive workers, he who has advanced in knowledge of the higher values of life is favored by the Supreme Lord Hari. Out of many such people who are advanced in knowledge, jnanis, one who is practically liberated by virtue of his knowledge may take to devotional service. He's superior to the others. The purport describes that human beings have a higher intelligence. Most of them are using that intelligence for their animal propensities. But some of them are at least inquiring, what is the meaning of life? Out of those, one may come to the conclusion that devotional service to Krishna is superior to mental speculation and trying to figure things out. That person is considered superior to the others. However, one who has actually attained prema, pure love of Krishna, is superior to him. The gopis are exalted above all the advanced devotees because they are always totally dependent upon Sri Krishna, the transcendental cowherd boy. Among the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the most dear to Krishna. Her kund, or lake, is as profoundly dear to Lord Krishna as this most beloved of the gopis. Who then will not reside at Radha Kund and in a spiritual body surcharged with ecstatic devotional feelings of Prakriti Bhava, render loving service to the divine couple, Sri Sri Radha Govinda, who perform their Astaka Lila, their eightfold daily pastime? Indeed, those who execute devotional service on the banks of Radha Kund are the most fortunate people in the universe. Of the many objects of favored delight, and of all the lovable damsels of Brajabhumi, Srimati Radharani is certainly the most treasured object of Krishna's love. And in every respect, her divine kund is described by great sages as similarly dear to him. Undoubtedly, Radha Kund is very rarely attained, even by great devotees. Therefore, it is even more difficult for ordinary devotees to attain. If one simply bathes once within those holy waters, one's pure love of Krishna is fully aroused. Purport describes that everything has different potency. So the different things we come in contact with, just because they're spiritual, don't reap the same results. It's not that everything is one because it's spiritual. There's also diversity within spirit. So the waters of Radha Kund are particularly dear to Krishna and have the potency to bestow upon us that particular love that we heard about and are meditating on now, that Lord Chaitanya is bringing, that we discussed this on Advaitacharya's appearance, that elevated conjugal love, simply by bathing in this Radha Kund, excites that in the jiva. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes, madam.
I'm not sure if I missed it, but after Parvati, she had the child to take care of Taraka. How did that
wasn't mentioned, but we know she did. It's Kartikeya.
Oh, that was Kartikeya. Was there some particular thing that you could just mention about that? Just
don't know the past.
All right, but Kartikeya did.
Yeah. Tamaharpa?
To Cupid, did he get his restored after he was burned to ashes?
I think he became a Pradyumna, didn't he? In one of his incarnations, and yes, I think he was rejuvenated, because we know he's still working. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.